Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Are you ready to enhance your spiritual and magical practice? While learning about the arcane Gnostic mysteries? Join the redeemed Ark on Sabaoth on his fool's journey with the Gnostic Tarot. Learn about the journey of the Gnostic Jesus. Follow Mary Magdalene in her quest for forbidden knowledge. Experience the celestial majesty of Barbalo, the Supreme Mother. Commune with the invisible spirit or the one of the Gnostics. Accompany the Gnostic sage Marcellina as she weaves primordial mysticism. Engage with Marcus the Magician and his coven of Gnostic witches. Experience the fall and liberation of Sophia in the simulation. Also discover the sagas of Abraxas, Simon Magus, Thunder, Valentinus, and more. In the end, see if Sabaoth and Sophia can unite to defeat the Demiurge. The Gnostic Tarot is perfect for divination and gnosis, the knowledge of the heart. Cast alchemical fire upon the world, like Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas. Or grasp the mysteries of existence like Mary in the Gnostic Gospels. Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, but it is. It just is. Especially when you arrive to Aeon Byte, when you arrive to the virtual Alexandria. Welcome all of you, you spiritual entrepreneurs, you veterans of 1,000 psychic wars, you modern day Tom Sawyers, your mind not to rent to any god or government. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your pompous of Gnosis. And again, so glad to see everybody, however and wherever you are listening to this podcast. I know 2025 has already started with many bangs, many apocalypses, but as Julian of Norwich said, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Especially when we do these shows where, as I keep saying, the answer is to go inward, and that usually means go into the underworld, to those liminal spaces, the Bardot, those places where there is so much magic. And this is certainly a topic for this week's show. I am very excited to have with us Charles Larson to discuss a book I enjoyed a lot, and that is Anubis, Ancient Egypt's Lord of Death and Protection. Charlie, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and hello to everyone that's watching.
Pleasure's all ours. And with us, too, we've got the moon dog, perhaps the moon Anubis. Vance, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm excited because, you know, I love dogs. And, you know, I wonder if Anubis has something to do with, had something to do with the Ark of the Covenant.
There you go. We can definitely explore that. Yes, I've had people send me this meme today when they found out about a show, and it's I'm sure many of you have seen it. It's a picture on top. There's a broken down bus, and it says "old bus," and then on the bottom it's a picture of Anubis. A new bus. Get it?
I've seen that. I've seen that. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, people are grokking these ancient traditions, and that's perhaps a good thing about the memes. People are really understanding the power of myth and magic and how this works, and acknowledging these very ancient forces that we forgot and we need. So, trying to look at the silver lining, Charlie. I'm trying to look at the
silver lining. So, well, that's needed sometimes.
Yes, very true. So awesome. Well, I see everybody's already running into the chat room, hopefully in your new bus. As always, if you have any questions for Charlie, please super chat them so that Vance can separate them and get them to them. If you have any complaints against Vance and I, please let us know too. And yeah, not much housekeeping. As always, please support Aeon Byte any way you can. Like, subscribe, share. Tell all your friends, tell your pastor, tell your family, maybe not. But support in any way you can. Join the Patreon, AB Prime. You can go to the Red Circle for as little as $4.99 for all complete shows. And yeah, a lot of cool surprises coming in the first quarter of this year. So stay tuned. But yes, please support. I do take one-time donations, crypto, Stripe, PayPal, however you can, to keep the lights of the Pleroma on, and we can all keep writing our own gospel and living our own myth. So let's get to the main event. So Charlie, it seems Anubis is a figure that is actually been very prevalent in your life. I think in your book you talk about a walk with your grandfather when you first encountered this force.
Yes. Just to kind of shortly recap the story, to take a step back, I didn't formally start working with Anubis or even know who Anubis was until I was probably in my teenage years, maybe high school age. But looking back when I was a child, there was a day my grandfather, so I was raised by my grandparents, so I spent a lot of time with my grandfather, and so we liked to go out in nature, go hiking, go just walking, whatever. And you know, in Indiana where I grew up, there weren't a lot of options for that, so it's just like you find somewhere that's not a cornfield and looks like a forest and you go wandering around. Anyway, we were wandering around one day, and it was, I think, kind of in the fall, and kind of a cloudy day, looked like there might have been storms off in the distance or something, and we were walking along. I was already kind of afraid and anxious, and I was an anxious kid, kind of a baseline. I still am, but as we had drove in, you know, you're off of the road and driving down this kind of dirt path that goes back into the woods, and there had been a recent storm that had, like, the lightning had torn part of a tree down, and we had to drive across this bridge that was, I swear, probably no more than an inch wider than the car was on either side. So this is old wooden bridge, and so by the time we got to where we were going to go, I was already just highly kind of on edge and anxious. And we got out of the car and started walking along, and we didn't get very far. We came to the edge of this woods where there was a clearing, and out of nowhere a deer ran past, and then shortly after that there was a dog, a Great Dane, followed by a number of coyotes that had run past chasing it, and then the dog and one of the coyotes stopped and stared at us, and just stared, and neither of us really knew what was going to happen. Were they going to attack? And the dog kind of growled for a moment. And my grandfather walked with a cane. He was disabled, but he said, "I want you to get in the car." And he held up his cane as if he was going to, defend us if he needed to. And I said, "No, I think we're okay." And, you know, before I knew it, both were gone. And I just suddenly, for whatever reason it was, I was feeling fine. I felt calm. And the dog and the coyote both looked at me, and I just thought, you know what? I think that I'm fine. And, you know, like I said, they ran off. It was fine. It was no problem at all. But looking back, that may to some people look kind of like a just a kind of a silly coincidence. But for me personally, it's always been something that stands out in my mind. And I kind of, in a way, connect it to later connecting with Anubis and having a relationship with Anubis. So,
yeah. Well, there's no coincidences. As magicians, yeah. We know that.
That's true. That is very
true. It all makes sense, and the universe has always been communicating. And when did you formally encounter Anubis, or consciously, if you would?
That's a great question. So, well, I was raised in a, I guess, a Christian home. My grandparents had to work, so we didn't have a lot of time to, you know, go to church as most people in the community did on Sundays. That's kind of what everyone did. But I think when I was maybe 10, we started going to church, and that kind of Christianity kind of became my predominant, you know, sort of path, spiritual path. And eventually I kind of got to a point where I started exploring other avenues that maybe aligned a little bit with more of what I was kind of seeing in, of the world. And I started reading books on, I don't know, just kind of basic beginner books on witchcraft and earth-based spirituality, like paganism, shamanism, whatever I could find, to be honest with you. And I got to a point where I started feeling kind of a draw towards a particular deity, and I didn't really know what this presence was or who it was, but anytime that wasn't loud. Sorry, I live right next to train tracks, and they occasionally honk and scare me.
No, we can't hear it. The noise cancellation is working on our end, so we didn't hear anything.
It derails my thought, though. You know, thumbing through books, every time I came across names such as, you know, Hecate, Anubis, the Morrigan, Santa Muerte, any of these deities that are typically associated with death, it kind of just jumped out at the page at me. And I didn't really quite get why at first, because, I mean, I had experienced loss in my family, you know, literal death. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, I had a sense of what it was, but I thought, well, I'm going to go with this anyway. And the more that I started opening myself up to this, the more I realized it's not necessarily literal death that is connecting me to it. You know, I kind of had a turbulent childhood, so to speak. So mm-hmm. I realized that theme of the cyclical nature of death, life, death, rebirth, all of that, and sort of the theme of transformation was something that really spoke to me personally. And eventually I narrowed it down to Anubis. I can't necessarily say that there was this epiphany moment where, you know, I had this prophetic dream and he spoke to me, and it wasn't anything gorgeous like that. It was just all of a sudden I had this knowing that it was Anubis. And yeah, that's really how I started formally working with him. And as they say, the rest is history, or the present.
Yeah. Maybe it's not like Abraham, Yahweh picking Abraham. We all, like you said, we don't get all the special effects and pyrotechnics. But, you know, as they say, we don't choose the gods. They choose us. And we have to be open to, you know, back there, you're talking about Santa Muerte, and that's who has adopted me recently. And that's it. And Artemis. And that's the end of the story. I'm not going to mess with them, because I'm sure, Charlie, the gods aren't very kind when you reject them either. They will F you up.
I have stories about that, if I can just throw it out there. Sure. Anytime that I can't attribute this to anything else, anytime I've done something to neglect my relationship with Anubis, he breaks a statue that I have of him in some way. I think I mentioned I was originally from Indiana. I moved to California back in 2017, and I moved here with, you know, a moving van full of stuff, my stuff and my partner. And just, so I just had this massive moving van, drove all the way across the country, had everything meticulously packed carefully. Everything was wrapped, all of my statues and dishes and everything. I got here to California, and The one and only thing that was broken was a statue of Anubis. That was it, out of an entire van full of things. And I had not really kept promises that I had made to him. And that has happened, not the same story, but that has happened in some capacity at least three or four other times since then. So I'm careful to keep my promises.
They'll let you know for sure in one way or another. So, well, yeah. Let's talk about the main event, Anubis himself. Again, your book is great because it's not just a book of history. It provides the mythology. You provide exercises. You provide your philosophical approach to Anubis and other gods. So it's a multifaceted and useful book and very educational. So it's got everything and it's got a little bit for everyone, even if you're not at all interested in Anubis or even if you just want the history and that's it. But it's got something for you and something to help you. I guess the question before we even get started, because you address this in your book, is the idea of death, because a lot of people go, what's all these gods like Anubis and Santa Muerte and Hecate? But I think it's not death's fault. You agree that one of the mental diseases we have in the West is that we have rejected death.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I was just talking to a friend about this the other day, that I feel like, at least here where I live in the United States, historically, death has been kind of a taboo subject. And understandably, it can be ugly and cold and scary and all of these things, but it's not ever been something that we want to talk about. And I say we, the collective we, as in a country. But I was talking to a friend about this. I kind of feel like that might be shifting a little bit. I don't know. I see a lot more people, or maybe it's because of the things that I interact with online. I see a lot more people talking about celebrations of life instead of kind of this traditional somber funeral, for example. And I mean, I understand why people fear death. I do. It can be dark and scary, and yeah, but. If you look at cultures around the world from kind of every part of the globe, you'll find cultures that not celebrate death, but celebrate life, or look at it in a different way, as it's not necessarily the end point. There is no end point a person's soul, spirit, whatever you want to call it, continues on in some capacity. And so I think that people here in the U.S. are kind of shifting slowly, but that's another topic. But
yeah, indeed. And I think these deities help. I think the Egyptians and others, and even today in Mexican culture and others, death and life are just, there's a more of a spectrum. They're not that different. They're both part of each other and within each other. And the dead are not dead. And in many ways, many of the living are not living either. So we have to, when we approach it that way, as somebody very wisely said, ancient Egyptians weren't obsessed with death. They were obsessed with eternity, the entire journey and how it ended. So
yeah,
it's a good way to live, and death is one of the only certainties. Well, I know taxes, but maybe there's no I don't know if there's any gods of taxes, and who would give that god any offerings. Maybe Vance and I can start a new church, a new god.
Maybe, but George Soros or somebody. Yeah.
Something like that. So, yeah, and I think changing our psyche will heal the collective psyche if we're more like that. Life is precious, but death is just another extension, and we don't have to let go of our ancestors, our loved ones, even our pets. I recently lost a pet, and of course, it's devastating, heartbreaking, big void. Those of you who've lost dogs know that it's a void that can't, it's a different sort of pain and anguish. But that she's not gone. Neither is my, you know, we can communicate with them. They do appear. She actually has appeared to me in a couple of dreams, and she's fine. And if she has something to say or tell me, things are okay. But it's and same with other ancestors and friends. They appear in meditation, dreams, and my life is richer, much richer. And they have wisdom that's beyond, that's so invaluable. So
absolutely. Yeah, I've had the same thing with pets. Ironically, I don't know why I'm throwing this out here. Ironically, though, I've been always more of a cat person, despite what you may think. I'm both.
Yeah, wait a second. Oh, there's your Bast statue.
Yeah, Bast, right? That's going to be mad.
I did used to work with Bast a lot, so maybe that's where it comes from. But anyway, that's a different story.
Yeah. So let's talk about Anubis. When did Anubis first appear in ancient Egypt? And what's his story? What's his family story, lineage, and all that?
All right. Well, if you look back to about 5,000 to 6,000 BC, you start finding associations between jackals and death. And the speculation that I have always kind of aligned with is that so jackals are carrion animals. They will just pick off of whatever they can find that's already dead. They do hunt, but their kind of preferred method is kind of the lazy way. And if something's already there and it's dead, I'll just eat that. But you know, in the early days in Egypt, people would bury the dead in just kind of in shallow graves in the soil or in the sand, and jackals would sometimes dig them up and eat them because they needed sustenance and there wasn't anything else. So there's kind of a speculation, and I can kind of see where this comes from, that as a way to sort of appease the jackals, people started, I don't know, you could say they started praying to them, started talking to them, maybe finding other ways to appease them so that they're not eating the dead, they're not eating grandma instead of, maybe they're maybe providing other alternatives. I don't know. But anyway, the idea is that this could be a very early form of aligning Anubis with jackals. So Anubis is kind of classically thought as being, when you look at him portrayed in art and in artwork and in statues and things, he's often portrayed as having the body of a man with the head of a jackal, or as I like to say, a canid figure, because we don't know for sure that it was a jackal. People say that it was a jackal, but you know, you can read places that say it was an Ethiopian wolf or some mythical figure that doesn't exist anymore, or a mythical figure or an extinct animal that doesn't exist anymore. He's often sometimes portrayed as just a whole jackal body and all. And so by around, I think it's like 3,000, 3,500 BC, you started seeing this kind of portrayal as Anubis. And so in the earliest records, Anubis is said to be the son of Ra, the sun god, and a form of Hathor, Hesat. And as time went on, so taking a step back for a second, what I like to remind people is that what we consider ancient Egypt really spans thousands of years. And by the time that Cleopatra was born, the pyramids were already thousands of years old. So I say that to remind people that over time, things change, and you're going to find contradictions. You're going to find things that don't necessarily make sense. You're going to find gods and goddesses rise to popularity just to be buried in the sands again, so to speak. Over time, There is a myth that became popular about Osiris, who was originally a god associated with kind of civilization, agriculture, sort of the good god, I guess you could, so to speak. And the short version of the story is that he was murdered by his vengeful, as they call him, brother Set, and was chopped up into a bunch of tiny little pieces and scattered throughout Egypt. And his wife / sister, Isis, the goddess Isis, sought to bring him back to life. So she sought out the knowledge of magic from the god Thoth, who was the god of wisdom. And she sought out the help of Anubis for protection at the time. But then it came to a point where they found all of the pieces of his body. But in order to bring him back to life, they needed to then put the body together and preserve it in some way. So then for this, Anubis invented mummification and embalming. And once Osiris was brought back to life, then Osiris rose to being Lord of the Dead. And so I guess, you know, looking at it now, it's like, did Anubis get a demotion? Because before that, Anubis was like, right. Anubis, yeah, I know. It's like he got demoted or whatever. But no.
You got put in the doghouse, literally.
Yeah, this is where you run into kind of some contradictions, because it's like at some point in time in way back in history, Anubis was the Lord of the Dead. And so suddenly now, and you look at reference books and it'll say that he's the god of embalming and mummification. And so that's kind of what he has become known as. But there's far more to him than that. But that's kind of the big picture of how he sort of evolved. And, you know, you look at kings and queens and important religious figures at the time. Some people just decide who's more popular and who's not. I guess that's kind of a weird answer. But, you know, look at the way that I'm picking Christianity, for example, in the last 2000 some odd years has changed. You can say the same thing about ancient Egypt. Things change a lot over time.
Yeah, so. And 2000 years is nothing to the Egyptians. So yeah, it's things evolved, different rulers, different times, different perceptions, different consciousness. At the same time, for the most part, like your book says, Anubis was always still involved in the whole underworld process, the managerial. He's part of the managerial team, the afterlife.
Yeah. Yes. That's a good point that I so in the afterlife, the journey into the afterlife, upon death, the soul of a person would have to go through a series of trials to get in order to get to this wonderful place in the afterlife. They had to go through a series of trials, and Anubis was to be the protector and guide through this journey. So even today, people that work with him, like me, often see him as a protector and a guide, not just of the dead, but also the living. There's evidence that people even in life would petition Anubis for protection through their life and into the afterlife. And so at one point in their journey, they would reach the Hall of Truths, the Hall of Judgments, whatever you might want to call it, where their soul, which was represented by the heart was kind of the seat of the soul, would be weighed against the feather of Maat. Now, Maat was both a concept and a goddess of truth, order, justice. And so you see these classic images of Anubis with scales, the traditional scales that had two balancing points on it. You would weigh the heart, the soul, against this concept of truth, order, and justice. And if your soul was deemed lighter than the feather, you were worthy of the afterlife. If it was deemed heavier, you maybe did some questionable things in life, then your soul was said to be fed to a demon goddess of Amit, who was a conglomeration of all the scary things of Egypt at the time, a hippo, crocodile, and a lion, kind of. Yikes. All in one creature. But anyway, Anubis was the presider of this ceremony. He was not the one that passed the final judgment, but he was the one who sort of presided over this ceremony to weigh the heart. So that is why you often see him with a In fact, I have a statue in the other room of him with two scales that he's holding, or not two scales, but a scale that he's holding. So yeah, there was a lot of, I guess, overseeing the afterlife in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, it was. They had things going, and I love the 42 negative sins. It always struck me, and of course, 42 had so much significance. I don't know why the Egyptians chose 42, but obviously, in occultism, numerology, and of course, with me, you know, Douglas Adams, 42 is the answer to the life. Everything is. So I'm like, I wonder if he was reading the Egyptian Book of the Dead, but
I wondered that myself.
And of course, I've got my Elvis book. He was 42 when he died, lived in Memphis. So anyway, 42 to me is an amazing number, and I think a beautiful. Was it? Yeah, you confessed what 42 sins that you have not committed to Mat.
Yes, there were 42 statements that were, each one was addressed to a different either god, goddess, or spirit, because they were other. Figures, I will say, other they weren't all gods and goddesses, but spirit of some kind that were all in this hall, and you would proclaim to each one a separate statement that said, I did not do XYZ. And I suppose you could loosely say that they are kind of you know, things that said you lived a virtuous life, I didn't kill, cheat, lie, steal, whatever it might be. They were all things of that nature. Yeah, you would say this before your heart was weighed, and or as your heart was being weighed, and this was kind of the way that you were judged based off of these statements.
Yeah, very true. Did you still watch the show Moon Knight?
Yes, what yes, I love that show. I love it. I know there's so much high fantasy fiction about it, but just for me, seeing anything related to Egypt in that sense, I think is, I love it. So I eat it up. There's also a book series that's meant to be for probably like teens and young adults called, what is it called? Now I've lost it. The first book is called The Red Pyramid, and it's completely fictional, obviously, but I love it because it's just, you know, you find so many stories about the Greek gods, and it's like, oh, hey, here's one that involves the Egyptian gods. And so.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, cool. I'll have to check it out. I'll let my daughter know. So,
yeah.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
What about you, Vince? Any questions on your remarks on your end of the pyramid?
My end of the pyramid. I'm wondering whether Anubis has an equivalent in the more modern gods, like Greek gods or Romans or anybody else.
That's a really good question. The Egyptian empires finally eventually just fell. And so the ancient Egypt, as we knew, kind of had an end point, but the gods didn't necessarily. Over the span of what we call ancient Egypt, like I said, that's thousands of years, you had lots of other cultures that came and went. The Greeks, the Romans, Persians, so many others. But what happened over time is that things would sometimes blend. Other cultures may sometimes adopt the gods. If you look into ancient Greece, you will find a figure who we now call Hermanubis, which is...
I've heard of that.
Yeah, so you can find... There's a statue of him in the Vatican, a large statue that I would love to see someday. I don't know that it's open to the public, but if it was. But anyway, it's this robed figure of a man with the head of, it kind of looks like a dog holding the caduceus. And I can't remember, a palm leaf or something. But it is thought to be a blend of Hermes, and based off of the name Hermes and Anubis, which might seem a little odd at first, but both were psychopomp figures who ushered souls into the afterlife. So I think that's where that comes from. However, one thing that, and I encourage people to read this in my book, that I do talk about as an alternative theory. I don't know that I prescribed either one of them because I think they're both very interesting. The name could possibly be a blend of Horus and Anubis, because, and so we, the Greeks use the term Hermanubis, but if you look at Egyptian Heru em Ampu, you've got Horus as Anubis. To someone, an outsider, so to speak, who doesn't speak your language, you could adapt it to something that does sound familiar to you. You're like, okay, Hermes, Anubis. I know this sounds kind of funny, but there are... It's widely accepted that it's Horus and Anubis. I'll say that, but there are alternative theories. But anyway, Hermanubis continued on through the decades. I don't know that I can say the millennia, but through the centuries at least. And even just Anubis himself, you find him in spells invoked along deities like Hecate, for example. You can find him invoked alongside spells with Hecate for various purposes. A lot of them were divination, curses, things like that. And you also go off into a different direction to ancient Rome. You find that he ended up having kind of this necromantic cult following that was eventually forcefully disbanded, but they incorporated Anubis into that in some capacity.
And what does the Anubis mean? The name, do we know?
So Anubis is the name that the Greeks assigned him. His name in ancient Egyptian was something, and again, I'm someone who is not a native speaker or even any kind of speaker of the ancient Egyptian language. We can only kind of guess how things were pronounced. But Anpu, in some capacity, something related to that, Anpu was his name in ancient Egyptian, which... there are different interpretations of it, of what it could mean, but one of them is royal child. He was the son of, either way, whichever myth you prescribe to, whether it's Ra or Osiris, was a, they were both at some point the king of the gods. So, right. Like, he's a royal child either way, whatever his mythological origins are.
Exactly. And at the same time, for his importance, I think you're right, in the necropolis, or you're talking about the place in Saqqara where they found 8 million mummified dogs. Whew. And that's quite a sacrifice, or that's quite a, I guess in the afterlife, whoever has to walk those dogs is going to be busy.
A lot of work too.
Yeah. Don't pee on the tree of life.
It was Saqqara. They found, they being archaeologists, found some 8 million mummified dogs. And initially, I think people thought that maybe they were a sacrifice to Anubis. And I know that's easy to assume that. But I mean, obviously, there's no way to know for sure, but what I think, and what a lot of people think, is that it was rather a sort of pilgrimage that people took to as a final resting place for their their pets that they lost, their dogs that they lost, because, I mean, you know, it's no different than today. People had loved
Rainbow
beloved
Bridge.
Pets. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's sort of the final resting place for their beloved pet. It's to, you know, say, here, Anubis, please protect my dog, Fluffy, in the afterlife. So I don't know why I threw out the name Fluffy. Well, anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure it was important. I mean, yeah, bringing up my dog, it was like, she passed in the house, big dog, 90 pounds. And of course, you're sad and all that, but you're going, what are we going to do? Put her in a blanket. And the next day, I took her to the, we lost Charlie. I knew we got him. Well, hopefully Charlie will come back. I didn't do, but took him to the cremation place and was, oh, there you go. Let's let Charlie back in. There you go. You're back.
What just happened? Sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you lost a glitch on the internet.
That could be.
Yeah, but as I was saying, took the dog to the pet cremation place, and it was only till I'm like dragging her off to the platform and the ovens are there, that's when it hits you. It's yeah. Almost like we need that ritual, no matter how small it is, whether it's pets or humans, because I realize I was in a complete state of denial for 24 hours, even though, you know, I'd rested the dog and carried it. It was only the ritual itself that brought all the grief. And then tomorrow I'm going to go get her remains or ashes. And, you know, then there's that other part of the ritual plus all the dreams and prayers I've been doing. So
yeah,
it's so important. Yeah. The ritual is important, regardless how small you think your pet is or whoever it is, a distant relative, it doesn't matter. We will go in denial and we won't process our feelings unless we go through the whole ritual, if you would. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, and of course, nobody did it better than the Egyptians. And you, in your book, Charlie, you call him the great shaman. Why do you do that?
Well, the idea behind shamanic practices is often... Well, I mean, it's multiple things, but if you take a step back at death and look at it as a transformation, transformation can include multiple things in life. But life, like I think I mentioned earlier, life is just a part of a cycle of life, death, and rebirth, and that any kind of change or transformation that you experience in life, especially if it is related to any kind of healing work related to trauma or pain or grief or suffering of any kind, often requires you to kind of go down some dark paths and face the reality of yourself and your circumstances. Some people call that shadow work. Yeah. You know, some people call it shamanic practices, whatever it might be. But you sometimes have to kind of go within and find lost pieces of yourself, so to speak, in order to find wholeness again. And so I call him that with the intention of being someone who is a kind of a guide on this journey, because I'm not just talking about literal death when I talk about, I mean, I do spend a portion of the book talking about death practices in Egypt in kind of the literal sense, but also in the more metaphorical meaning of death. He really stands out to me as a figure who can be a guide for people who are experiencing or need any kind of healing experiencing some type of trauma, pain, grief, suffering of that kind, and need some kind of healing and some kind of guide. I should say he is the guide, not someone you're petitioning to just, you know, heal you, but someone who was a guide to lead you through that healing, because a lot of times this kind of work does require you to do a lot of that soul searching yourself. So I find that when I am working with Anubis, he is someone that expects you to do the work. He expects you to, you know, do the work.
Yeah, no. Very true. And yeah, indeed, well said. And yeah, I think Vince was talking about Anubis in modern times, and I'm going to say it, and I know it's going to trigger a lot of people, but it's in the news. But Anubis does make it in a very cool way in Neil Gaiman's American Gods. Now, I know what's going on, obviously, what's going on with Gaiman, but that book is will always be one of my top five favorite books. I don't know who Neil Gaiman was when he wrote it. I know what's happening now, and it's very unfortunate. We have to wait till allegations come out. If I was a betting man, don't look good for Gaiman, but still, he does. I love the way he uses Anubis in American Gods.
No, same. Yeah. I. It's not super common to find portrayals of Anubis in modern media, but I always eat it up anytime I do find something.
You get it while you can.
Maybe Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, ghosts and everything.
Yeah, I don't know why.
That's actually a good thought.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know why you brought it up, because also you talk about what a quandary you are, Charlie, because you talk about Marion Zimmer Bradley in your book too, and of course she ended up being a monster too, a predator. And I'm kind of glad, because my mom's favorite all-time book was The Mists of Avalon, and I'm glad my mom passed, because I don't know if she would have been able to handle, you know what I mean, what we found out about Marion Zimmer Bradley. But it's unfortunate. I mean, people have a shadow, and there's no guarantee if you go to these dark places of the imagination, or you get tempted with fame and money, something, it's within us, right, Charlie? We have the potential of becoming darkness and monsters if we're
absolutely
not. Doesn't matter how talented or spiritual we are. So cautionary tale, people, cautionary tales. So for the audience too, another modern interpretation, probably a very important one, is doesn't Anubis kind of appear as a Catholic saint?
Yes, at least theoretically. It really depends on how people interpret it. But Saint Christopher was in early days portrayed as a figure having the head of a dog, or a canid, I should say. At face value, not necessarily a lot of connections. If I remember Saint Christopher, one of the many things is a patron who protects travelers.
Yeah.
Exactly. So taking a step back, you can kind of connect that with being a psychopomp.
Yeah, easily.
Travel in the sense of kind of a spiritual travel. Your spirit traveling to another, I guess, plane of existence, but. Yeah. Again, it's all speculation, but it just, to me, when you look at it, it just, you know, it seems like they are all ways that in some capacity Anubis kind of lived on. And I still think that there's a lot of people today in modern times that recognize Anubis, maybe not even without realizing it, because I think if you look at anything that in popular media that involves ancient Egypt, you often see portrayals of the gods, and perhaps one of them might be a figure of someone with the head of a jackal, candid figure. So I think a lot of people recognize him without even knowing who he is. So I kind of like to think that he never really, you know, there are some more obscure gods and goddesses out there, but I like to think that he's one that has sort of withstood the test of time. One thing I mentioned in the book is that one of my favorite sort of, I guess, metaphysical, occult, New Age spirituality stores, it was kind of a little bit of everything, store in Indiana, when you walk into their library room, had this giant 5-foot statue of Anubis that I always wanted to buy, but it was never for sale. Just to say that he still is someone that's kind of predominantly, and I think a predominant figure in people's minds.
Robert Anton Wilson talked about him in the Cosmic Trigger book and its connection to the star Sirius.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I need to read that. What's the name of it again?
The Cosmic Trigger.
Cosmic Trigger. Okay.
Does he appear in the series or the movie Stargate, Vance? Do you remember?
I think he does, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he does, but I don't remember that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's always going to be one of the top five, at least 10 Egyptian gods, no doubt. Mm-hmm. So you've got the Holy Triad and Thoth, but then he's always going to be there. Top dog, if you would. You also call him you say that the Ankh is the master key. That's associated with Anubis too, right?
Yes. If anyone out there has ever worked with the goddess Hecate, one of her epithets is Kleidoukos. But one thing that I didn't know until a few years ago was that that was also an epithet they assigned to Anubis, which Kleidoukos in ancient Greek means key bearer. And so the idea is that, if you kind of look at the Ankh, it's almost in a way kind of could look like a key. And so it sort of represents the idea that he kind of holds the key and is the gate. I don't want to say gatekeeper in the sense that he's holding you back, but gatekeeper in the sense that he can lead you to sort of the deeper mysteries of the world, death, transformation, deeper knowledge and mystery of the world. You see him over the years, as I mentioned, invoked in spells and divination. So really any of the deeper mysteries of the world that involve any of those broad categories, it's kind of something that I not just I, but something that is connected to Anubis.
For sure. Vance, any questions on your end or super chats from anybody? And
yeah, we got
send your scoop chats before we end the show. Okay, go ahead.
Your favorite synchronicity involving Anubis. I don't know if Chester was with us at the beginning when you shared your encounter, but go ahead and tell Chester and the rest of us what your favorite synchronicity is.
Thanks, Chester, as always.
Yeah, thank you for the question. It's funny. I work with multiple gods and goddesses, not necessarily all Egyptian, but from various pantheons. Some are very loud and in your face in terms of providing signs. Like when I started working with Hecate, it was literally everywhere to the point where it was like a license plate that someone had basically spelled out Hecate with numbers and letters and that sort of thing. Anubis has always been a quieter figure for me, but I think one of the things that stands out to me is when I first started working with him, I grew up in a small community that was quite, I don't know, I felt rather alone in my community. I grew up as a young gay man in a conservative community. And so I found myself not really feeling comfortable in my, where I lived. And Anubis would often appear to me in dreams in the early days, not so much anymore, but he would appear to me in the early days in dreams. And it was always never necessarily that he was the central part of my dream. It's not necessarily that the dream was about Anubis, but he was always there as sort of this comforting figure kind of in the background, like just to say that you're fine, you're safe. So that always kind of stands out in my mind.
Yeah, for sure. I think go ahead, Vance. Did you?
Yeah, I was gonna also ask, I was thinking about Hermanubis and Hermes is Toth. So do you think there was a connection there and sometime in the past between, you know, Anubis and Toth? Were they buddies or, you know, what connection can you say they had?
In the in the afterlife, when I mentioned the weighing of the heart ceremony, Toth was the one who sort of read the judgment to the individual soul. They were connected in that sense. If you look into the myth that I mentioned earlier, trying to resurrect Osiris, they were both sort of part of the goddess Isis squad of God squad of trying to resurrect her husband.
Right. They're buds.
Yeah, I have to share a story from last night. Speaking of magic, I put Santa Muerte on my desk over here in front because I was feeling just off, you know, death of the dog and all this other stuff. So I put her over there to keep me company. And she has a scythe, and the scythe, you lean against her. It's loose and whatever. And I'm walking around, and suddenly I hear the scythe moving. And I turn, I'm like, Santa Muerte, you know, she's trying to communicate, and I'm getting so excited. And then I realized the cat had gotten behind the statue and was not like you did. So it was a close call, unfortunately. It wasn't.
Oh, she sent the cat.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, maybe it's the same thing. It's the same.
It was Bast. Sign. Yeah.
Yeah. So say, Bast, get over there. Rattle my statue a bit.
No. She speaks, but this time it was just the cat being the trickster. The cat being the trickster. So.
As they can be.
Yeah, as they always are. So as we get to the end, what advice do you have for individuals who want to start working with Anubis? Again, your book does have, again, a lot of cool work. I like your cord cutting work because, again, it's such good shadow work, but in a ritualistic way. Yeah. So for those of you who need shadow work, definitely check out Charlie's that section. But what advice do you have to work with the god?
Yeah, I guess working with Anubis, be open to having to face some of the, if you want to work with Anubis and become serious about it, be open to having to face some of the parts of yourself you may not want to. Things may come up, that old wounds that may come up that you may not have thought about. If you intend on working with him in that capacity, but he's a great companion if you want any sort of protector or protection by your side. He's also great for that. But I guess I don't want to say don't take it lightly, but from my experience and from the experience of a lot of people that I know that work with Anubis, he's not someone you need to be so intimidated by as other death deities might be. He doesn't, or at least to me and from what I know of others working with him, doesn't quite have that same reputation. So I don't want to say don't be afraid, because take it, you know, obviously you want to take it seriously and kind of be careful with what you're doing. But also, you know, approach him. Don't be so afraid that you don't. One thing I will say is that if you're ever considering working with Anubis, I find personally that he doesn't really care so much for formality. He doesn't really care if you're going to sit there and say the right words in the right order and, you know, memorize these prayers that are in ancient Egyptian. And talk to him like you would any other person. And obviously with a healthy degree of respect,
Yeah, like a folk saying, have a relationship with them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Good relationship, you know, like they tell me, wake up and say good morning to your God, you know?
Don't, yeah,
exactly. You don't have to keep your promises. Keep your promises to him, right? Or else he's going to break your statues.
Exactly. So, yes, you want to be very respectful, but at the same time, just be yourself.
And are there any holy days that you associate with Anubis?
I don't have a particular day that I think I honor Anubis. I do a lot of work honoring deities around, I'm a pagan, So I do a lot of things around Samhain. And I do a lot of work with Anubis and other death deities around Samhain, but I see a comment. Someone said Anubis is a poodle.
watching out there.
Anyway, no, I don't have a particular day that I honor him. I think that he's such a prominent figure in my life that it's kind of pretty much anytime, everywhere. Though I will say, something that has become very important to me is on sort of these liminal days, these sort of in-between spaces, like on the solstices, the equinoxes, are important to me, and also something that I associate with Anubis, that sort of liminality. There's a whole part of that in the book that I write about that I encourage people to read about, related to the equinoxes and things. But that has become something in the last few years that I do work with him during.
Yeah, and by death deities, which ones are you talking about? Let's see. Santa Muerte, who are there some death deities? The Aztecs have a ton. You said Morrigan.
Morrigan, Hecate.
Hecate is good. Okay. I always hear her as a trickster because she's always helping humanity in the myths.
Yeah. I guess Hades is another death deity.
She's a psychopomp. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people forget that Persephone is a goddess of death.
Yes.
That was one of the, we assume it's spring, but she's also got, she got the other job too.
And she's involuntary though. It wasn't into it. More a hostage, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she took her job seriously. The Greeks were terrified of her. So
yeah,
at certain points.
Yeah.
Just came from a bad neighborhood. That's all.
You're going to play Journey, Don't Stop Believing? Yes, just a small town girl. Well, this has been good. I also love your book has different quotes in the chapters. And there's this quote, and it's great advice, whoever wants, no matter what deity you want to work with or how you want your altar or anything else. But you have this quote from Joseph Campbell that says, your sacred place is where you can find yourself over and over again. I think that's the bottom line, right, Charlie?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I am kind of the school that there is, when it comes to I'm looking at giant big picture here, there's no right or wrong way to have a spiritual practice. I think if you are trying your best to navigate your way through life and with good intention and with having your head in the right place and working on yourself in some capacity, I think that's the most important thing. But I think having something in your life, and it doesn't have to be a physical space, but having that internal space where you're aligning yourself to something bigger than yourself is a sacred space in itself. It's not, I'm not just talking about having an altar or something that you go to that's a sacred space. It's also internal. And I think that it's very important to have something like that internally, to always come back to, no matter what is going on in life, no matter how crappy things may seem, you've always got something internal that you can turn to, that sacred space that you can turn to kind of get you through it. So I really like that quote.
Yeah, beautifully said. I love it. So I definitely wrote it down and keep it near me because it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, we are towards the end. What was I going to say? A little housekeeping. Next week, we've got Dr. David Litwa. We're going to be discussing the Corpus Hermeticum. We'll have Hermes in the house. David has a new translation and some insights on Hermeticism. And then the Reverend Barlow will be discussing some of our favorite villains, the Kelepoth of the Kabbalah. But we'll also be discussing the Tree of Life, the Tree of Death, Metatron, and a lot of cool Jewish mysticism. So good shows coming on next week. Again, thanks, Chester, for the super chat. Appreciate those who support. And first I'll say, Vance, thanks for keeping us company on this journey to so many cool underworlds.
Oh, you know, I loved it. I feel Anubis is a very friendly guy, and you want to respect him, but and he's laid back, but love him. So glad to be here.
Yeah. And Charlie, before we go, I'll have it on the show notes, but where do you want to send people for your book and to find out more about you?
You can go to my website, which is AnubisLightAndShadow.com. If you are on social media, you can also find me. I have a Facebook page, Charlie Larson Author. I'm on Instagram, and it's X now, used to be Twitter, and Threads at @Charlar_Author. So you can find me online. There are links on my website to purchase the book, and yeah.
Cool. Yeah, and there's links in the show notes if you want to get his book. So I enjoyed it, and I think you will too if you purchase it. So check it out. But we are at the end. And yes, Charlie, really appreciate it. Your book. Here it is on Anubis. And appreciate your time and coming on the show. And good luck with everything.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me on here today.
Pleasure is all ours. And for everybody else, I hope you have a good rest of the night, a good rest of the evening. And I hope that some wonderful pet or some wonderful God visits you in your dreams and just makes life so much more worth it. And remember, death and life, as the Gospel of Philip says, they are simply brothers to each other, and at the end they're one and the same. So that's all I got. And yes, take care, everybody, and we will talk sooner rather than later if the gods are willing. Good night.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.